Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, it is the next edition of the Vintage Cavs Book Club. Just as a note at the top of the show, you're hearing this episode on Friday, July 17th. Evan and I, due to me getting my wisdom teeth out, are recording this on Monday, July 13th. So, if things are a little different, we'll find a way to record an episode if something crazy happens. But if there's like some minor Cavs news out there and we don't talk about it, that's why. Just giving you the full clarity and transparency that you, the listener, deserve. But without further ado, let's dive into the book club.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Evan, I gotta say, this 7, 8, 9 of Vintage Cavs, pretty high up there in terms of my enjoyment.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. Joe Tate's a guy I always looked up to, and it's kind of cool when I learned, like, George Gund was blind, he relied on Joe Tate to be literally the voice of the Cavaliers so he could get the general idea of the layout of the court, the color of the uniforms, the atmosphere of the arena overall. Like, that's a lot of big stuff, and then just a lot of other cool things along the way. But before we
let's make this quick, because our bosses are episodes, don't go so long.
Yeah. Whatevs. I hope there's Cavs news after you get your teeth pulled, just because
my oral surgeon made a nice chat today, and he did tell me that the uppers are not nearly as bad as the lowers, so he said I should be kind of back to normal, like, that day.
I heard the opposite, because I got my lowers taken out, and I was, I guess I was a little loopy for a few days, but I did wake up in the middle of my procedure, and I went to see
you're
the point
crazy, Evan, that,
day, so.
That, well, why? That's Justin Rowan level shenanigans.
Hey, my then high school girlfriend also was the last football game of my senior year of high school.
You've told me this. You've either told the story on the show.
She slapped my cheeks and I started bleeding everywhere. So, yeah, it was just a fun time overall. And I was out of it for a solid few days. And then I almost dry socketed myself. But yeah, no, Vintage Cavs, speaking of stories, is a great story in itself. And let's talk about the small town guy, the big league voice, also known as Chapter 7.
I have a fun fact about Joe Tate really quick. A friend of mine from middle school, who I lost touch with after that, like, we just weren't friends, but I don't know where she is now, but her, Julie Davis, that's her grandfather. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What a small world.
I was the only person who thought that was cool.
Did she feed you intel? Did she feed you intel since you thought it was cool? Oh, well.
Got the meat.
It was cool to an extent, I guess. But, just Joe Tate's career path is so interesting. Like, some of these small college, like, I know about Monmouth because they offered me something when I was doing the whole college trek 2010 when I was in high school. But I never heard of Co before, and then there's just a couple other small schools that in areas that Joe Tate worked with, and I like the nickname the Morning Mayor. That's a fun nickname. I wish I had something like that, but I also don't have a voice for radio, I'd say, so I don't think I'd ever get that.
Yeah, I mean, some of the people working radio in Cleveland right now are kind of donk, so I wouldn't say that, but him just his grind, his approach comes through really, really detailed in this chapter. He, I think, along with Tom Hamilton, is like among the definitive Cleveland sports voices. Now, I think just because
those two, then, well, Fred for
so
TV,
this is where I get
least.
Fred, I think, is probably, I think Hamilton's number one, but I think Fred is probably number two, and he gets the advantage over Joe Tate because of the television part. And unfortunately, like, I don't think as many people listen to basketball games on the radio in the way they did in the 70s, 80s, even probably the 90s. Like, I just don't think it's as common now to, like, cue up 1100, especially because 1100 does a lot of other crazy stuff right now. And, you know, you, like, don't listen to a Cavs game that way. And that's, like, kind of, that that's not a shade to like John Michael or anyone else who does that. David Locke obviously does that, and he does a, those guys put in a lot of work to what they do. It's just not the way we consume basketball now. And I don't even sometimes like have the, like I turn the sound off and just have some, like just watching because I just don't want to like break. But Joe Tate is a guy that I would listen to call anything, even though I know he doesn't like modern basketball quite as much.
Well, I have to say that when I interned and lived in bumfuck nowhere, Indiana, Cavs on the radio was one of my reliant things of my illegal streams. Sorry, mom and dad. And, I think it was Comcast as my ISP at the time. If you happen to be listening, yeah, I did stream Cavs games illegally. And when those didn't work, I listened to them on the radio. And, Joe Tate was gone by that point, but he was synonymous. And I feel like also set the gold standard for what is expected of a Cavs radio guy, because I noticed at least when John Michael had taken over, he did a lot of Joe Tate type things where he really like set the layout of the arena, what direction the Cavs are going, the color of the uniforms, like everything. Like I said, like it's fascinating because they started it with the guns and the fact like that became the standard, but like that's just the way things go going forward. And like, no, the Cavs just, you know, always give their best effort when it comes to the production quality of their product. The product may not be the best, but at least the production behind it would be great. But it is unfortunate that Joe Tate was at Ohio University. That's my only blemish against
him. Three wonderful years. It's a good thing. Athens, great town. Athens in the 60s must have been a good time.
Did they burn couches then? And did every student obnoxiously say they were the number one party school in the country, even though they really weren't?
Look, that is a part of the Ohio University identity that I do not co-sign, and I don't
associate. Oh, so you're saying that Saturdays aren't for the boys?
I'm not a Barstool fluky, so
that's
no.
That's fair.
Barstool sucks.
I also wanted to take a note of this. In this chapter, they talked about the Cavs' first season with their 7-game road trip, and they went to Buffalo, Portland, San Francisco, Portland, San Diego, Phoenix, and Los Angeles in 11 days.
This is like commercial flights. This is a commercial flights, dude. This is insane.
That's absolutely nuts. And the fact that in the middle of the trip, Joe Tate gets the call to take over and says that like when we come back to Cleveland we want you to be the radio guy, like just talk about like a last second kind of thing, just to really drop that on them. And the fact that like again the Cavs West Coast Cavs were something Chris and I struggled to stay up for, with how bad this team was in its first year of existence, especially the flight from Buffalo to Portland, that's brutal. But your first year in existence, you're spending all that time on the road, then you come home to like a pretty much of a mausoleum of an arena. Like that's just rough, man.
Yeah, and one of the other things about this is that his vlog, I guess the bury the lead Terry Pluto does here on page 46, buries the lead that Joe Tate apparently got a divorce after he got sort of working during his job.
That.
But it says that I actually didn't realize it until I was looking at the page right now. And it says Tate said his first wife, Edith, was listening to the game with him. And she was pissed because he was leaving more money and leaving this other job. And then that station had been sold. And then like everyone lost their job anyway. So it's not like he would have had a job for that more money if he would have stayed. It's just funny like how the connection of him and Fitch and everything like that. He's 33, just trying to – he's been grinding for like – almost 15 years at that point, and it just kind of works out in a really, really bizarre way. And you know, like he's living in the hotel, like there's just all these kind of bizarre things, and like it's just like a crazy time. Like now, I mean obviously the Fred McLeod's passing was a different circumstance, but like they plan these things out like well in advance, even for the radio. Yeah. Like they're pretty careful about this, and this is clearly just another instance of like how different the NBA
and how differently Nick Belletti really operated too. And before we wrap up this segment and jump towards chapter 8, I do think it's cool, and Dimitri, the guy who suggested this book, I know has one of these glasses, but the wine glass idea was super cool, but I thought it was funny that since the Cavs didn't have the proper license for it, they had to toast with empty glasses before the game.
Yeah, it's a great touch. That feels very fitting for
the early Cavs. But I've seen the glasses themselves. And Dimitri, if you guys don't follow him on Twitter, it's DE Meatloaf. I think he's posted pictures of it. He won it in an eBay auction or something. That's a really cool collector's item to have when it comes to this team. Like, not really something you thought of, but it has a good sentimental value to me and like a good just thought, a good idea overall. But like you said, very fitting for these early Cavs that they had to toast with empty glasses.
Yeah. All right. With that, let's take a quick break and we'll be back to talk about the awful first year, the 70-71 Cavs, right after this. Okay, Evan, so the Cavs start off their existence 0-14.
Oh, baby.
There's this great anecdote about Bill Fitch, like, knowing the Cavs record at even, and gets into the arena in Oakland because he knows the ID, knows the team's name without quite having his ID. He said he'd never lost 15 games in any season. I coach college. You know, they're wondering if they need to lose games. And here,
John Bailin, the quote,
yes, extreme John Bailin vibes. Real. Which it's funny on a lot number of levels, but two quotes, two lines in here that I really like. One is a quote from Fitch: "War is bad, expansion is worse." I like a good one-liner. I'm a sucker for a good one-liner. John Beilein like would have like 9 minutes, like not hey, 9 minutes, but these like longer soliloquies.
He
like
tried trying to plead explain the fifth everything. That one I'm like, time.
Yeah, yeah, John, John.
And his one-liners came during film sessions, not in front of the media.
Not too soon.
Never.
Here's one of my favorite lines about that Peluto writes here. This is where I think his writing really shines. Fitch's father was a Marine. Fitch was also in the military. He knew war was war and basketball was a game. But he also knew there was a certain emotional death that comes from losing night after night after night after night. I know guys were like, Pluto was guilty of this, of like kind of being the old man on his lawn and like complaining about people now, all that stuff. But I can tell you, losing still really bothers these guys, even if they understand like some of the things. Like they just know they're gonna get beat on a certain night, that they're just the caliber of team is just better than them, all that stuff. Well, like it does get draining for these guys after a while. That's a
fact. It really is, and more so he alludes to the fact that like a lot of these guys the Cavs picked in the expansion draft were veterans that some good teams, you know, the Lakers and the Celtics at the time, didn't want anymore and somehow ended up in Cleveland, and they don't want to be here to begin with. And the fact that they're stuck in a losing, crappy situation after being in a very winning and very successful situation is definitely hard to go through. And the Bill Fitch quotes made me think of John Boeheim a little bit, where how John Boeheim was absolutely miserable towards the end of his career. And he said, like, when Bill Fitch said, "Why would I say I was the coach of the Cavaliers unless I was coach of the Cavaliers?" And security guards just like, "Go right ahead." Like, that reminded me of Boeheim. And the fact that, like, losing night after night after night does have an effect on these guys. And I can see how it rubbed a lot of the current Cleveland veterans the wrong way. And more so that you want to avoid establishing a losing culture, and thankfully Bill Fitch was able to right the ship pretty much a season or two after this. That's just something you really think about. Like, it's just absolutely grating mentally, not even on the coach, but the players as well. Like, especially when you're like Bill Fitch, or in current times John Boeheim, where you're so used to being able to handpick your team and then being successful continuously, to end up in a losing situation like this. Like, it's just deflating and depressing, and it's just tough to cover.
Yeah, and like, you don't have like the luxury of like a charter flight.
Yeah, you don't have a charter flight, and then I mean, you just don't have any of those things. Like,
yes, can I here's a question I have for you. It's sort of rhetorical, but so there's this great anecdote about Bill Fitch buying a skull in a window of a magic shop in Portland for like under $1.95.
I was gonna talk about the fact that the NBA meal stipend was $20 a day when they're on the road. Like, that, I mean, I guess $20 in 1971 money. I don't even know what that is now. I'm going to do a conversion while you keep talking.
That is also kind of crazy. But that's like a bottle of wine for like guys now. Like, Josh Hart's like chugging it in his golf cart and in the bubble. But Bill Fitch gets this skull, holds up the skull high, and says this is all that is that's left of the Denver coach after they before they beat Portland, like before they play Portland and they're 1-15 and they win that night. But he has all the players touch the skull like it's like Yorick from Hamlet. Can you imagine like John Beilein being like, "All right, guys, I bought this skull, and like you're all gonna touch it for good luck."
Well, John Beilein did other weird things to rub the Cavs the wrong way.
No, but I would, a lot of questions.
It gives me strong vibes of. It gives me the strong vibes of when Mike Singletary dropped his pants and exposed himself to his team when they were losing at halftime and said, "This is what you're getting whipped right now." And I'm like, it's just a little weird. And for those wondering, $20 in 1971 is $126.61 today, which still isn't a lot for the lifestyles of the rich and famous. That's just super interesting. The fact that, like, Portland wasn't a very good team, and then they tried to do the skull thing the following night in Seattle, and they lose by 20 points, and I don't know how the Supersonics ended their year in 1971. I'm going to Google it while we talk, but I don't know. I feel like if you're so desperate for a win, it's only weird when it doesn't work, and it worked for one game, so it wasn't weird for one game, and then it just became just a catastrophe all over again. Oh, the Sonics that year finished 47-35, third in the Pacific Division, and they were coached by Lenny Wilkins, so there's another.
There's a lot of other good stuff in this chapter, but I feel like it'd be a disservice to the listeners to not talk about Gary Suter.
Oh, yeah, I haven't. Some Evan, notes and marked bits
well,
on it.
Give everyone the 101 on Gary Suter. He has some stuff.
Sorry, I'm still flipping through. I got caught up with the fact that Austin Carr shared that Bill Fitch kept a pistol in his office to shoot rats in the arena.
Great stuff.
That's something.
Okay.
Why don't you take the lead?
Gary Suter, undrafted free agent, played at Midwestern University, which I did not know existed. It's in Wichita Falls, Texas. 6'9" forward, makes the team. Okay. Plays a little earlier in the season. They apparently are getting phone calls from someone saying Suter should play more. Eventually, the Cavs figured out that Suter himself was making the phone calls.
Cavs community.
Ted Carper is losing his mind. Like, he's having palpitations thinking about it. Hi, Ted. Here's the kick.
Yeah, that's just, okay? he's weird.
They found him going through the luggage of a teammate, Larry Mikan. Weird, okay? They don't know if it was just weird or he's trying to steal something. He gets cut because Cavs trainer Ron Culp found Suter in the line of an arena hot dog stand in his uniform about an hour before a game. Then, after he gets cut, he goes down the street to a funeral parlor. He tells the director, who's a member of the Cavs, had lost a parent and needed to make funeral arrangements. Could he use the phone to call some family members, Pluto writes. So he calls other teams, asks for tryouts. A month after he's cut, someone from the funeral home came by with a $750 phone bill for calls made by Suter. Plays in a career 30 NBA games, 140 total minutes. And per this, sadly, he is murdered in 1982 over a $275 gambling debt.
Well, sadly enough, Gary Suter was enlisted as Midwestern State's notable alum on their wiki page, which is a bummer. But Rio Rancho, New Mexico is where he was murdered. But just
really Breaking Bad Universe, so, show number
no,
three.
Just...
Gary Suter. Let's go.
Let's go.
I'm in.
I mean, Vince, if you happen to be listening.
You put a ton of Dortmund kids in Better Call
Come
Saul.
On the show.
So, like, we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
There we go.
One of the Germans, when they're at the nightclub in Better Call Saul, are wearing Dortmund kits from that year. It's pretty great stuff.
Soccer. So, anyways, no, the hot dog stand thing was definitely interesting. In the fact that, like, how wild and weird these Cavs were in their early existence. And I'm trying to think if there's any like modern examples of like players trying to pull these stunts. Like players get.
Who's the guy who was it? Nerlens Noel who's like eating a hot dog in the Mavericks room.
I think it was Nerlens Noel. I always remember Russell Westbrook like trying to sneakily eat something on the bench. There's that one thing. LeBron has snatched food and or beverages out of fans' hands and taken a sip. There's always that iconic shot of him drinking a Great Lakes beer, which I still don't know. They haven't made a beer off of that, but also LeBron is very persnickety about who can and can't market off his image, so I guess I get that. But it's just that's a wild thing to think. The fact that you boldface lie to a funeral home to try and land with another NBA team. Spoiler alert for those listening, he doesn't. The Cavs are the only team he played for, and he averaged 1.4 points in 30 games for the Cavaliers, which is just a career that never really took off, and just a weird time overall. And I can't believe I like glossed over that because I'm like flipping through, and I had like a bunch of tabs like highlighted on it, and I'm like, I've zeroed in on that Austin Carr thing, so I'm like, yeah, the Cavs coach would keep a gun in his office to shoot the rats in the arena. Like, that's just... These Cavs were a mess their first year of existence.
Having a guy like Gary Suter on your team is itself... I'm going to link it below, but there's a YouTube kind of... This guy made a 18-minute YouTube video about Gary Suter's career. And apparently, according to the notes I'm looking at, if it's not good, I apologize. I haven't watched it yet. I'm just promising I'm going to link it because I'm just all in on this guy now. But according to this, he apparently collected every edition of Mad Magazine.
That's he's a man of taste. I, as one who loved Mad Magazine when it was in its prime, Spy v Spy was always a good comic to read. Yeah, good choice, Suter, Gary Suter. Just rest in peace.
Okay. Well, with that, we're gonna take one more break. And Evan, why don't you tell everyone about the sponsor on today's show?
Oh, I'd love to. And you know, if Gary Suter wanted to work at the funeral home and he needed to work on the funeral home's hearse, he could have used rockauto.com. One reason to repair and maintain your car, such as a hearse, is to save money so that you can use that for other important things like mortgage or food. Why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, 100%, or even more for the same exact auto parts at the chain store or new car dealership? At rockauto.com, you can save money on your auto parts. Let me do that part again. Starting here. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and new brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, or your hearse if you're Gary Suter. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need.
RockAuto.com. And with that, we're going to be right back to talk about one more chapter here right after this. All right, Evan, we're through this kind of very beginning area of Cavs basketball. Well, I guess we have the fans writing in. There's some good letters there. I guess, are we going to the Austin Carr chapter here? We didn't really discuss this. Are you counting the letters as a chapter?
I am not. I jumped straight to the AC chapter. I read it and I'm like, that's nice. And then
all I'm going to say about this, and I'll let you lead because I've been talking a lot. I don't care that Austin Carr dropped 61 on Ohio University. Ohio University has two mentioned in this book. The University of Akron has zero. Scoreboard.
Sorry, I was just flipping ahead here, just listening to your dribble and diatribe BS about your fake party
again,
university.
Not my university.
Whatever, man. Listen, you guys beat Michigan.
Hey, beat John Beilein.
That is something to hang your hat on, but that's true. I'm surprised I'm sure Michigan's AD had to talk him off the ledge, much like Kobe Altman and Dan Gilbert had to talk him off the ledge of the preseason loss to Boston, but Austin Carr is a great what-if for the Cavs. I think all-time what-if for the Cavs. If you look at his numbers, especially if like you're a younger fan and maybe more casual with this team, you're wondering, like, why the hell is Austin Carr's jersey retired by the Cavs? Is it just because he's the TV color commentator? No, he was the first like major player drafted by the Cavaliers. He owns a ton of NCAA records. He owns like so many Notre Dame basketball records. And the fact that just injuries kind of got in the way and kind of sidelined what could have been a very good and promising career is just really a shame. And like Chris said, it's an all-time what if. Like, if he stayed healthy, it could have changed the landscape of the Cavs in so many different ways.
He's a guy that I think would have been really interesting in like a modern context. I think he's kind of that kind of guy. Like, he's kind of the scorer of that way. Finds out. Of course, he's written by Siri Blue as the best college basketball player he'd ever seen.
I think that's Anthony Davis's freshman year in Kentucky was pretty incredible, but there's a lot of people like who have watched a lot more college ball than I have and have watched basketball a lot longer than I have that feel that way, because Austin Carr was really, really, really good for Notre Dame, and like Chris and I touched on, it's a shame he didn't work out for Cleveland, and he was part of that miracle of Richfield squad. Mm-hmm,
that's
an
example. We'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week, but like, that's another what if, because there's are some people, I think Terry talks about it in this book as well, like that miracle of Richfield squad could have been a championship caliber team, and if Austin Carr is healthy, maybe the Cavs win a surprising championship really early into their infancy of existence and completely changes the landscape and narrative about Cleveland sports. And just everything else associated with the Cavs. Like, it's just a weird what if to think about, like, in this window of time and just for a brief few years. I mean, AC is with the Cavs for 9 years, and then he plays 8 games for Dallas in the 80-81 season, and then he plays 39 games for his hometown, then Bullets for the 80-81 season, and then promptly retires after that. But no, Austin Carr was just super gifted and super special, and you and I have, at least me personally, have gotten to know AC a lot better because he's the color commentator for the Cavs. But, like, you start talking about this and just all the other things he did, and, like, when I read the quotes, I can hear it in his voice, which I think is, like, one of my favorite parts. Like, AC has such an iconic voice for calling, just from listening to him call so many games. And the fact that he bought a purple Oldsmobile Toronado for, and if he had rockauto.com back in the day, I'm sure he would have been able to keep it up, but then he switched it out for a classy Mercedes. Yeah, you know what, it's funny, like, that's something you always wonder, like, what do NBA rookies spend their money on? An AC blew it on the most frivolous thing possible, but he's also a sensible human, returned it and got something a little bit more respectable in terms of just a car.
The one of the things that I think is crazy about Austin Carr is that he averaged 38.1 pre the 3-point line being like a real thing. He averaged 37.9 as a senior. Like, that is just absurd. He finds out he is drafted in his history class. His professor tells him.
Yeah, that's so weird to think that the NBA draft was such like on the back of everyone's mind. Like,
yeah, and here's the most galaxy, something that would never happen now. And teams would go out of their way to kind of signal, like, the Cavs made a big deal out of, like, seeing Darius work out in LA, for example. Here's Bill Fitch. Quote, I didn't need to see Austin before the draft. I knew he was a player who could change our franchise. He was also a great kid. That's crazy.
It really was, and their other option was Sidney Wicks, who went to the Portland Trail Blazers, and I think it's a really good endorsement by the pick of Bill Fitch, where he's just like, nobody has to throw the ball at a car, and he'll bring it down to the basket himself. Every time he does that, it's 20 points coming down the floor. Like, that's a really nice thing to say about a rookie. And I also think that's just another thing about the genius of hiring Bill Fitch as a coach, where it works out here because he is a college coach. He's able to mold and develop these younger players like Austin Carr and all the other young players that come into Cleveland. So when they start to get good, it's because Bill Fitch was instrumental in their development.
The injuries, I think, are the really kind of the one all-time
things. Yeah, they're tough.
So he suffered a broken bone in his right foot. In a rookie league game, according to this,
which is a death sentence normally for some basketball players, but like at that time, without the luxury of modern medicine, that really just wrecked his career.
He came back too soon during training camp in the fall, breaks it again during the first week. It says this, quote, I was cutting to the basket, just changing directions. It was during practice. No one touched me. It just broke. I guess it was wear and tear from playing on all those concrete playgrounds growing up. He just never has the same mobility after that. It just adds up. He has 4 knee surgeries in an era of very different knee surgery before he retires. He said there were days where it, quote, felt like my knee had rocks in it. Said one day I jumped, came down, and my kneecap was just pointing to the right. Same couple times. He would, like, just do leg exercises just to try to get leg strength. The craziest thing maybe about all this is that he doesn't seem particularly bitter, doesn't seem particularly kind of troubled by some of this, but the injuries just pile up for him. And, you know, obviously that happens. That's not an unknown thing for people, but, you know, it is notable and sucks, like, that he's injured kind of right as soon as he gets in the league and never fully recovers.
No, it really does. And do you think Terry Pluto's assessment of AC, saying that he could have been another Jerry West, do you think that's a fair comparison? Because Jerry West is quite literally the logo of the league. That's a rooting endorsement to give. I know he's friends. It's very with AC, optimistic, but yeah, I'd say so too. But his game was a modern game for a very old school NBA where they didn't even count 3-point shots back then. So if they had that, his scoring numbers would have been even more inflated, more so than what they were, because At his peak, he averaged 21.9 points per game on 44.5% shooting and was nearly 90% from the free throw line. Like, really good numbers, especially for a shooter. And, yeah, it's just a shame. It never worked out. And, like, he was a part of that Richfield team, but he wasn't, like, the guy for the Richfield team. It was an amalgamation of all the parts.
Yeah, 100%. Pieces. I would be much more bitter if I was Austin Carr.
He's in good spirits about it. They wrap up the chapter saying that the Cavs have been really good to me, and I'm just incredibly blessed to be where I'm at. Like, I know it's... I've heard, and this book kind of touches on a little bit, where he is disappointed and frustrated that his career didn't end up the way he hoped it would, but I don't know. I guess that's, like, something that would really haunt me, and I guess it's really nice to hear that he's not really dwelling on it too much, which is always a good thing.
Right. Evan, any final thoughts as we get out of here? I'm very much looking forward to next week.
Me too. You bullied me before we recorded about how I didn't play Animal Crossing.
Wow, now this comes out.
I guess that's nice.
No,
I watched the features. You did. I think I texted you about it, saying, like, "Oh yeah, they added diving."
Yeah, and my wife and I got the group package. We're both, you know, going to be visiting islands, and I just want to visit my friend's island and that.
Chris has a very cute, picturesque island, for those wondering.
It's very lush.
Not the cosmetics, which, you know, if they're listening, sponsor the show. You want to try our demographic for more than one. Listen, guys should self-care and love themselves. And if you buy Lush stuff, isn't just for women, guys. They make men's soap, and it smells incredible, and it makes my skin feel great. As someone who used to be a former pizza face in high school, Lush is a game changer, and that's my unsponsored endorsement of Lush, and I hope everyone has a good weekend. It's just, I'm waiting for it to cool down, but I just don't think it's going to until the Cavs are back in September or October or November or whatever it ends up being.
We'll be back to 5 days a week next week, so look forward to that. For myself and Evan, this has been Lockdown Cavs, and have a good weekend, and we will talk to you soon, and hopefully by Monday, Evan will have visited my island.
Fat chance.